It's 7 a.m. here in New York City, and you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org on the web. Coming up next, what's going on this morning with Frenchie Davis.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Happy Friday, good people. How are we today? It is a beautiful Friday. We woke up, we're listening, we're tuning in, we're checking in, we're feeling good. I've started off with my lemon water. It is a new year. It's the second Friday of the new year. It is Friday 14th. I am your host today. I am Frenchie Davis, in case you're wondering. And we are on the cusp of the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. And as we approach this day of remembrance, I want us to have an untraditional conversation about our spiritual and civil rights leader, Martin Luther King Jr. Now, I continually have questions about the role of religious leaders in our livelihoods, culture, and politics. Why do we so often forget that these leaders are still very much human with their own flaws, talents, and gifts? And if we take a panoramic view across our experiences today, there is no question that MLK's prominent speech remains a lifetime aspiration for many in America, but honestly, not enough. What leeway should we afford our religious and spiritual leaders? How much should we dissolve into our psyche and spirit? And where do we create our own boundaries? Why does the space that is known to be so holy still remain segregated? And I'm speaking about our segregated churches. We all recognize that there is still a Black church and a white church. Have you ever really listened or read the words of Martin Luther King Jr.? And I quote, he says, "There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied. As long as the Negro is the victim of unspeakable horrors of police brutality, we can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." So this Friday, as we take a unique look at the humanity of our spiritual leaders, should religious leaders take on a new plight? How do we move beyond dreaming and poetic sonnets of a better America? Today, I will discuss this topic with our special guest, Reverend Dr. Lisette Cross. Reverend L, as we affectionately call her, is the founder CEO of Will You Behold, that talks sex and faith, for Wholeness with Black Women and LGBTQ Persons, and the co-founder of Us Giving Richmond Connection, that's UGRC, a Black LGBTQ health and wellness nonprofit that is responsible for planning and executing the first ever Black Pride in Richmond, Virginia in July 2018. So all of this we have to encompass today, but first we're going to listen to a little Gil Scott Heron. You know, the revolution will not be televised, but at least we could talk about it on the radio. And this Friday, we're going to have a little revolution. We're going to talk about the humanity of our religious leaders. Let's take a listen to a little Gil Scott Heron. The revolution will not be televised.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail.
That was one of my favorite superheroes. The revolution will not be televised. That was Gil Scott Heron. And now we're going to take it to a little national news before we get started with our pre-ML King conversation today. Let's take a listen. Let's see what's going on nationally.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I stand here in the name of the blood shed by those foot soldiers, Dr. Martin Luther King and John Robert Lewis, who shed his blood on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
It was all eyes on voting rights Thursday on Capitol Hill as both chambers of Congress continued the fight over the future of the filibuster. On a party-line vote, Democrats in the House passed a new version of the bill designed to trigger a fight on filibuster reform in the Senate. Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas was one of several members of the House Black Caucus who spoke in favor of the bill.
My friends who vote no today will disregard and ignore that bloodshed. I refuse to ignore the blood that was shed for the right to vote.
As it stands, Democrats would need 60 votes to pass the measure. If the filibuster is suspended, the bill could pass with a simple majority. In a symbolic move, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he plans to put the bill to a vote by this coming Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
If the right to vote is the cornerstone of our democracy, then how can we in good conscience allow for a situation in which the Republican Party can debate and pass voter suppression laws at the state level with only a simple majority vote, but not allow the United States Senate to do the same?
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell accused Democrats of trying to force a federal takeover of elections and argued there are more important issues Congress should be focusing on.
Now, there's a path forward for my Democratic colleagues to respond to the country they have so badly disappointed. But it isn't to try to break the Senate and rewrite election laws. It's to actually start tackling the issues that American families need tackled.
The filibuster reform effort, and therefore the voting rights bill, will likely fail, as Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona remain opposed to the rule change.
While I continue to support these bills, I will not support separate actions that worsen the underlying disease of division infecting our country.
As the Omicron variant continues surging, President Joe Biden has announced plans to increase availability of at-home COVID-19 tests. In December, the White House announced it would order 500 million at-home tests. Thursday, President Biden said they would double the order.
I mean, 1 billion tests in total to meet future demand. And we'll continue to work with the retailers and online retailers to increase availability.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court Thursday rejected the president's vaccinate or test requirement for businesses with at least 100 employees. The president is pushing for large employers to institute their own vaccine requirements. According to the Associated Press, at least a third of Fortune 100 companies have already done so. The court did allow the administration to push forward with a vaccine requirement for healthcare workers. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And that was our national news. We really have so much progress to make in this country. For Christmas and New Year's Eve, I spent my time in Tanzania, in a place that was maskless and felt almost COVID-free, because they engage in proactive diets and lifestyles that I believe in some way shields their body from the impact of this virus. And it was very interesting to live in that space for a few weeks and return to America with triple the spread of this Omicron virus. We have to do better as a nation in working to create a lifestyle of healing and not trying to heal people after they are already ill. So we have a lot of work to do. You know, this is the problem when you use capitalism over health care initiatives for the country. This is what happens, definitely. But on another take, The weather today is, you know, not so bad for the second week of January. It's 40 degrees today, cloudy skies early, partly cloudy this afternoon. Winds north at 15 to 20 miles per hour. That's a little gusty, but the humidity is relatively high. The sun will rise at 7:18 this morning. This evening, though, temperatures are not playing. Mother Nature has switched on us, and the lows will get to about 14 degrees. So please take care of your loved ones. Take care of yourself. Make sure that you are staying warm and safe, and be mindful of space heaters in your home. Please be mindful of that, good people. So you're listening to What's Going On here on WBAI New York. Every Tuesday morning, I also host, and today we are doing an ML King takeover. Today we are talking about the place of our religious and spiritual leaders in their own humanity and vulnerability. We seldom get to discuss the vulnerabilities of our religious leaders, from MLK Jr. to the Pope to Reverend Raphael Warnock. And I have our special guest, Reverend L, on today, because seldom do we also get to highlight our feminine spiritual leaders. How about that? Rarely are women religious leaders cast in the forefront of our concerns, while our religious leaders help address our social ills. What about their own? So I want to have a brief discussion. Last week, the Pope Francis had enraged a number of people by calling people with pets, you know, you fur parents out there. He called people with pets selfish if they chose their pets instead of children. So again, we're going to talk about the humanity of our religious and spiritual leaders. Today, and Pope said, today we see a form of selfishness, said the Pope. We see that some people do not want to have a child. So all of that we're going to discuss today, and our phone lines will be open, of course, because I want you to tune in with me and Reverend Dr. L. That is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. You can talk about your religious or spiritual leaders as well. But welcome, Rev L. Thank you for joining us on What's Going On today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here to talk about such an interesting intersection of the humanity of our faith leaders on this MLK weekend.
Yes, and I wanted to bring you on because when I think about the history of MLK, when I think about, even people that were hidden because of their sexual identities, that, you know, they put ML King on the forefront because Bayard was, Bayard Rustin was LGBTQ identified. He identified as a homosexual man. And of course, you can't put homosexuality on the forefront of this movement. We can't confuse the people when he was, you know, the brain master behind this movement that ML King was so prominently in front of. And when I think about the work that you do, I thought that it was befitting that you join us this morning. So could you please speak a little bit more about your work as we make the segue into this conversation?
You know, you make such a great point, Frenchie, about how our identities and our intersecting identities do come into play in the work we do in the world, right? And the civil rights work of individuals, not only of Bayard Rustin, but the story of the, you know, I have a dream speech, right? Where it was Mahalia Jackson. There is the story that it was Mahalia Jackson that inspired that, right? It is told that she called out, tell them about the dream, Martin. And so the women who were cooking, right? The women and who were also organizing, the people, other folks and differently abled folks who were also a part of all of the buses. I think that the work that I do in the world is about representation, right? And the representation is about the people. And one of the reasons that faith leaders often rise to public prominence is because the people trust us to speak on behalf of their needs. And other times, it is just about the time, the era, the culture, the moment where what we uniquely are called to do in the world just happens to hit that zeitgeist, that moment where, I just happen to say enough is enough. We deserve to have a Black LGBTQ festival here in Richmond to celebrate our unique identities. And we made history, right, in July of 2018. So my work has always been about how do I ensure that I get to work with the people and then speak on behalf of the people, understanding the deep reverence that our society has for those of us who are faith leaders. So it is always humbling, right? But very much so grounding to know that when we see faith leaders on the forefront, such as Raphael Warnock, right, who becomes the first Black senator to be voted into the U.S. Senate, that there is a lot of burden on his shoulders and a lot of people he represents. And it doesn't make any of us immune from healthy, accurate critique, which is different than destroying and being intentionally malicious. So I hope we get into that very thin line of nuance today as we talk about the humanity of faith leaders.
Yeah, and it is a delicate, complex space, right? That gray matter, you know, that goes beyond the gossip, but still allowing the humanity of these individuals to shine through. And you know, when I think about their humanity, that's why I feel like so many people grapple with commitment, because sometimes they have been, our spiritual and religious leaders have been put on such a pedestal that they get pushed further and further away from the humanity in that which we live. And it's like, you know, and then they are trapped in the box of, you know, you have to be perfect. You cannot be critiqued. You cannot discuss your own sexuality. You know, we had Bayard Rustin, Martin Luther King, was known for his, also recognized for his infidelities. But when you're a pastor and you don't get to be that sexual being, you don't get to have, you know, those flaws or those challenges around lust and acknowledge that and be able to grapple with that publicly. You don't have, you know, those options, and we do not have a sense of balance around our religious and spiritual leaders. So what do you think of that?
I think it's challenging. I think it's a two-way street. I think people are looking for a model. I think those of us who are called to be pastors and to be faith leaders in whatever context we find ourselves in also wrestle as individuals to live up to a standard that we have for ourselves, but that we know is part of the institution we represent. So when we think about it, we name high profile faith leaders or even faith leaders that are just in our community, you hit the nail on the head. There is pressure that comes from the people in the pews that want to have a model of a faith leader that they can aspire to, how they're living their life, how they get up Sunday after Sunday, preaching what we do to the best of our abilities as a message that comes from God, right? And yes, we can have a whole nother conversation on whether or not it's from God, but that is the role of the faith leader in most Protestant and even Catholic and typically Christian traditions. So you have the pressure from the people who are trying to work out their soul salvation and looking for answers. And then you have us, right? I'm a pastor, I'm a faith leader, who we have our own individual, right, work where we're trying to figure out. And there is the pressure that comes from the pews, but there's our internal pressure. So this question of our humanity is also a question of courage. How can we be courageous to live into the fullness of our identity, right? The fullness. So when I am clear about how I show up in the world as a Black, bisexual, Baptist ordained woman pastoring in the South, it is an act of liberation. It is a political act of naming my social locations. And it is a disruptive act to break down the respectability politics that have built up our Christian and faith-based institutions, and that we are all victims of the systems that we are like almost imprinted in our DNA to be a part of. So even for those of us that grew up in the church and then we come to our own understanding, and we may not go back to the church once we're an adult, or we go into the church and then something happens, we get disappointed by the behaviors or the words of a faith leader, we are significantly spiritually hurt, and then we find another path. It is unfortunately those crisis moments that cause people to have to discover for themselves what they believe. And that is also a critique of the institutional church. My job as a pastor and a faith leader is to not tell you what to think. My job as a faith leader and a pastor is to give you the tools to think for yourself, the space to talk it out and to work it out and to wrestle in community together, and then the guidance or support as you say, this is what I believe. This is how this works out in my life, right? This is about, this then becomes about how our belief of aligns with our ethics, how we're living our life. And none of those are simple, clean-cut processes. None of them are.
At all, but we're gonna try and unpack some of it today. Thank you for opening up this dialogue with us. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. You can join in with myself and Reverend L. But first, you know, I believe a change is gonna come. Let's listen to a little Sam Cooke and we will be right back to continue this conversation.
Yeah. since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
That was Sam Cooke, A Change Gonna Come, because a change needs to come. But we also want to change in some of this weather. I hope that we get warmer. Today is going to be 40 degrees, cloudy skies, winds north at 15 to 25 miles per hour. And then this evening is going to get quite frisky and brisky. So please wrap up, stay warm, and stay safe. Today, I want to reset the stage. We have our special guest, Dr. Reverend Lisette Cross, also known affectionately as Rev L. You can give us a call at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. We are visiting a conversation about the humanity of our spiritual and religious leaders. And we understand that because we often put our spiritual and religious leaders on a type of idealistic or perfectionist pedestal that they themselves cannot truly live up to. And then we experience this type of disappointment because we made them into superheroes that were not supposed to be flawed. And yet we understand that through our religious systems that no one can live up to these idealistic expectations, and we really need to visit that as we come upon the remembrance of ML King and look at him as the whole being, the entire being, the flawed being, the being that had to present as the heterosexual man because Reynard Bayard Rustin could not present, the preacher that could not put other women preachers to the forefront. So the preacher who also was known to have infidelities. We need to acknowledge the humanity of our leaders, and that's what we are discussing today. And welcome again, Rev L. It is so great to have you in this conversation. I think it's interesting when I look at a way to kind of analyze ML King. And, you know, he speaks about this dream, and I quote him, and he says, you know, "I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. And yet we just had the lifetime sentencing of the three murderers of Ahmaud Arbery." And how do we encompass this? You know, it's that speech was such long ago, and yet it is so reverent and so present today. And, you know, this was a man that spoke of peace as a revolutionary act, as religious leaders often do speak of peace. But should there be boundaries? Is this a part of the humanity that we need to allow for the sake of revolution to come through?
I think humanity.
Loaded question.
I know, right? humanity is broad and complex, and so as we celebrate the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend and his work, We have to acknowledge that MLK's advancing of peace, right, nonviolent action was one way to bring change in this country. There were group individuals and groups, and Malcolm X is one of those prominent public figures that didn't agree with that path. So I want to debunk this misnomer that all faith leaders see the same path toward justice, toward what Sam Cooke, right? I know a change is going to come. The path toward change follows many roads. There's not one way to do it, right? And we have to be, dare I say, hyper-vigilant in our own individual reflections and levying of responsibilities on our leaders, because our leaders are holding many voices, many challenges, many understandings, and seeking to lead people in one particular way. I will tell you a personal story. When I decided to gather other Black LGBTQ leaders here in Richmond to bring about Richmond's first ever Black Pride, right, which ended up being Virginia's first ever Black Pride weekend, I received critiques. Number one, how is a preacher going to bring about a Pride weekend, right? Because clearly preachers don't know how to drink and party.
And clearly they don't know who's in the choir either, but okay.
Okay. So one of them was, you know, one, you're a preacher, you shouldn't be doing this. How is it that you can know to do this? The other critique that was levied against me was that I did not bring enough people to the table, right? Meaning that I didn't ask whoever people thought I should have asked. Are they right? Potentially. Did I do the best I knew how to do with the tools that I had available to me? Absolutely. From 2018 to now, where we'll be celebrating 5 years, have I had opportunity to change? Yes. And what we often forget about MLK's life is the trajectory of his change. And that, in fact, a radical thing to suggest in public squares during this commemoration weekend is that the reason he was assassinated is because he was starting to move to a more radical assessment of the United States' role in the Vietnam War. So let us be clear that just like we as individuals seek to change, right? Because that's just about growth. Honey, I'm 46. I am not the same Lisette or River L that I was at 26. And we say thank you for that, right? You know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was not the same man who was initially hoisted at the beginning of the Montgomery boycott. His speech, you know, on April 3rd, 1968, that was not the same man. And we have to allow for change. And let me say this last thing, Frenchie, because change does not mean that we should not still be held accountable. His infidelities should have been held accountable, while also the balance of his ability to express or to understand that his sexuality was a part of his natural needs, right? Mm-hmm. And what it means for us as faith leaders to be lovingly called into account by our people and our peers, while also naming for ourselves, we have a responsibility to address the harm we have caused, whether that is directly, i.e., you know, who we may have harmed in our relationships, and indirectly, how we do have a responsibility to ensure that our public persona and behaviors does not dramatically or drastically cause the people who follow us and respect us to, you know, to stumble or to or to go off into another place. Because I am always aware, and I do believe, and I will say this on behalf of the majority of preachers, religious leaders, faith leaders out here, we take seriously our responsibility and the impact that our life, our actions, and our words have on the life, action, words, and decisions of the people who listen to us and follow us.
Thank you for that. Again, our lines are open, 212-209-2877. That is Dr. Rev L. that we are speaking today of Will You Be Whole. You can look up willyoubewhole.com as well. But we're talking about the humanity of our spiritual leaders. And I can only imagine the island that ML King Jr. was on, particularly starting this path at such a young age. I mean, I don't think that people recognize, because he looks so mature in his videos. You know, he was certainly aged because of all the stress and the weight of this movement that he had put upon his shoulders. I mean, he died, he was murdered at age 39. So he was quite, if I think that, wow, you know, this man is approximately 7 years younger than me doing this type of labor, doing this emotional labor. And I think about his extramarital affairs and the reasons, the loneliness, the isolation, the possibly feeling like you needed an outlet, no one to kind of turn to. You needed to not be the good guy all the time. And that we don't allow this, you know, type of balance in our leaders is really interesting to me, and is startling to me, the weight that we put on a religious leader. And I think about last week, even with the Pope and him calling individuals selfish for making a constructive decision to not bring a child into a world such as this, for a myriad of reasons, but to make a blanket statement to say that your choices for not having children or even having a pet is selfish to humanity. And while I can understand his goal in making his statement, I can chew up the meat and spit out the bones. However, how do we chew a statement like this up? How do we recognize that right now we're in one of the highest inflationary times in this country? We recognize that racial violence has been on the rise. We recognize that our education systems are failing. We're in the midst of a pandemic that has continued now for over 2 years. And then you have a religious leader calling you selfish. It's How hard. Do we swallow that?
It's hard.
Where do we draw a boundary?
I do believe that hurt, when it is inflicted, pushes us to have to address and deal with change. I do believe that for those of us who are committed to spiritual faith communities, have to often be faced with a crisis moment where we have to say, what do I believe? Not what does the leader believe? And if the leader has said something that goes against or is not aligned with the choices I have made for my life, there comes a rub. There's a dissonance that has to be reconciled. And that is often the invitation for people to explore. Unfortunately, in the difficult moment of pain, right? The difficult moment of hurt, the disillusion that comes. So for all the Catholic individuals and then other individuals who may not identify as Catholic, but listen and follow the Pope, to hear him say that is going to have an emotional reaction. That emotional reaction is going to prompt some type of reflective thinking, decision-making process. But let me be clear. Every faith religious leader is a part of a system. Pope, the Pope is a part of a system. And part of their system is to populate the world because they believe that a man and a woman were meant for procreation. Let us also not be mistaken that his statement is also a byproduct of patriarchy. How dare women choose to do what they want to do with their bodies and ergo not produce other humans for the reasons that are theirs.
Now you're talking about humanity. 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. But I also want to bring up, if you truly believe in that is your goal and that is part of your system, why not end the rule of celibacy in the Catholic Church so that those parishioners and leaders can also make families? If that's what you truly believe, why not end celibacy when you are literally smothering out the sexuality of the platform of the Catholic Church?
I am not a Catholic theologian. I am not an expert on Catholic teaching and practices. I am Baptist, good and Baptist. And what I will say as a
Baptist square.
Listen, and what I will say as a theologically trained individual who is educated is that to shift systems that have been grounded on a theological premise is to disrupt a whole institution. So I am not equipped. I don't know if equipped, but I'm not the right person because I'm not Catholic.
That's fair. It's just a question that I had yes. to kind of throw out there. Pope Francis, if you're listening, I'm coming for you. We do have a call on the line, 212-209-2877. We know that you are intrigued and absorbing this conversation. Let's go to our caller. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Juan. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia.
Uh-oh. Good morning, Juan. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. I'm calling as a construction worker. What I have to share has to do with the spiritual walk. I met a mother and a daughter who are of African descent here in Richmond, and they're homeless but have a house. Their house is in disrepair. And we don't have in our precious black and brown community a support system to reach out to these two ladies. And as a construction worker, I run into this problem all the time. This is the second time I called BAI. I have called PFW, and I don't get any reply. We need to establish construction companies specifically designed for us, who they fund, because these two ladies don't have the money or the support system to get rid of that pain that they have. This is part of the spiritual walk again. Martin Luther King said, I just want to do God's will, and that's what I want to do. I'm 69 years old, and I'm willing to donate the rest of my life for the community. And so I would love for one of you ladies to call me, get my number and call me, because I have something very important to share. My brother is a very important musician here in New York. He has a doctorate degree that he earned on high school music, and back in the 70s, I used to work with a collective black artists.
What we will do for the sake of time, we will have our engineer collect your information, and there might be some way we can assist. I'm sure that there are some ways to support this family that you feel so passionately about, and we really appreciate that. And our listeners are also listening. Let's do the humane thing, and if you have some way to support, please, let's create an open channel for that. Thank you so much for that, Juan. Real quick, though, and speaking of this, and Rev L, you kind of brought this up. Let's real quick. I'm feeling this energy right now as we prepare to close out the show, but I want to listen to a little How I Got Over by Mahalia Jackson. I feel like it's finished. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. my soul, look back and wonder how I made it over. How I made it over. Coming on over all this year. You know my soul, look back and wonder how did I make it over.
And that was Mahalia Jackson, How I Got Over. And we have to get over our expectations of our spiritual and religious leaders. They are part of our humanity, and that means that they are just as vulnerable as we all are. And giving them the space to live in their own vulnerabilities will also help uplift us all. I think it can all keep us bound more tightly in our faith and our spiritual beliefs. And for those who have moved away from traditional religious beliefs, it doesn't mean that we don't have faith. You know, an extension of not following someone doesn't mean that you still don't have faith. But I think it's really important that we focus on each other's humanity. And in thinking about Martin Luther King Jr., I'm more engrossed in his humanity, more engrossed in his vulnerabilities, more engrossed in, you know, why did he have these dreams? Why, you know, why was this the dream that he had? How do we become better believers and achievers, particularly when our churches are segregated? Our religious leaders have a way of enchanting the soul, romanticizing and possibly even oversimplifying life's real challenges and complexities. And so we must be careful of that. And that's why, Rev L, when we talked about boundaries, and it was so important, and I know that you always highlight this, especially for those who identify as LGBTQ or in some form of othering, where they don't hear the messages directed towards them. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because you definitely speak of a broader band of humanity. And I appreciate that with you.
Yeah, thank you. I have wrestled with many of those questions, and indeed, as a spiritual faith leader myself, wrestled with what it means to journey my own self, but also journey with people. And I really... it feels important to share about this question of segregated churches, that the letter from a Birmingham jail, mm-hmm. Martin Luther King received that letter, or wrote that letter, because he received a letter from a group of white male pastors asking essentially for incrementalism. Sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, change can go through many paths. Mm-hmm. When you are the person with the boot on your neck or the knee on your neck, rest in power, George Floyd, and the spark that that created, sometimes my pain and my culture might have to be separate in my faith experience. So when we talk about the Black church and the white church. It is more, I believe it is better for us to understand that there are cultural experiences to accessing God, to accessing our spirit, our spiritual beliefs. And so the Black church as an institution that Martin Luther King Jr. was birthed out of still becomes and still remains a cultural institution that is open to all people. The same is true for what is and can be named as the white church, which nowadays is becoming more multicultural. I just want to highlight, as we think about this, that it is about culture, it is about the time and space we live in, and it often is about theology, doctrine, and let's just be honest, Frenchie, when I go to church on Sunday, as a Black woman, I am wrestling with different burdens than my maybe a white woman counterpart who lives in a middle or upper class, you know, part of town. There's just differences. It doesn't make it bad. It just simply makes it different. And I want you to come to my Black church and I want to go to your white church, and we do need to fellowship together, and the segregation should end there. But our culture can absolutely be celebrated individually and collectively.
Thank you for that. Let's take our final caller for the morning. We appreciate your calls and your listenership here on What's Going On. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling from? We have 30 seconds.
Hey, good morning. This is TK out here.
Hey, TK. Good morning.
I think don't get me wrong. I grew up, as most of us, Sunday school, Baptist, Black church, went to Catholic school 10 years. I'm making that disclaimer. Read the Bible 23 times front to back. Making that disclaimer. Religion is the worst thing that has ever happened to humankind. That's how I see it. That's how I feel. I will not change my mind. Spirituality is great. Spirituality is everything. Religion is horrible. Every crime, every bad thing that has ever happened on this planet has happened through religion, because of religion, in the name of religion. I don't care who you are, Catholic, Hindu, whatever. Whatever's going on right now in the Middle East, in Israel, what they doing to the Palestinians. Every little thing is religion, and it's a horror. A horror.
Thank you. Thank you, TK, for that. I want to, and we got to close out the show, TK. Thank you. Rev L, as we're closing out the show, if you can briefly meet that in a meeting, there's in a minute, there's no way to really, but I really appreciate where TK is coming from. Let's wrap it up with your final comment on that.
Religion is a set of practices and doctrines that formed an institution. Spirituality is the core at which we access that which is greater than ourselves. TK is spot on that religion has been behind many atrocities, and the opportunity for religious institutions to be more spiritual is what faith leaders, pastors, you know, imams, priests, have the invitation to do, both from the people and from the divine. And that is, I believe, how we continue to not only lean into our humanity, but to collectively experience spiritual growth together as we bring about the change and even the dream that Martin Luther King talked about.
Mm, beautiful, well said. I have nothing to say after the way that you tied that up and put a little bow on it. That was a beautiful purple bow, because I know that's your favorite color. Rev L, can you please tell our listening audience where they can find you?
I have my website, willyoubehold.com. If you go there, you will find all my connections to social media. I am on Facebook and on Instagram, and you can reach out to me via that platform. Willyoubehold.com, all spelled out.
Thank you so much for that. And again, my name is Frenchie Davis. It is Friday, the weekend before ML King. Make sure you stay safe, warm, And I will be back on What's Going On every Tuesday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. I hope to find you there. Have a beautiful weekend. You can't see what's going on.
WBAI accepts snowmobiles. If you have a snowmobile, we want it. We also want any extra cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
The next WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting will be held on Sunday, January 16th, 2022. The meeting will be held by teleconference calling. The call-in number is 623-600-3766. The ID number is 963-003. Everyone is welcome to call in and join the meeting. Again, the call-in number is 623-600-3766. The meeting ID number is 963-003. Hope to see you at the meeting.
Hi, this is Tony Roberts, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.
Kenny of Everything Old is New Again every Sunday night at 10. Please join me then and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again. Because everything old is new again. I like it.
Native Lands by Will Calhoun. Over commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station WBAI at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember...